Hi, folks. It's the Quiet Light Podcast, where we share relentlessly honest insights, actionable tips, and entrepreneurial stories that will help founders identify and reach their goals.
Hey folks, Joe here from the Quiet Light Podcast. Today's guest is Rich Goldstein. I've known Rich for a while now. He's a patent attorney, speaker, host of the Innovations and Breakthroughs podcast. He's also author of the best-selling book, The ABA Consumer Guide to Obtaining a Patent. He's a product innovation specialist, counsels entrepreneurs and individuals, inventors, startups, regarding the best steps to take for patent protection and when patent protection is available, kind of an important step there. I've seen Rich at almost every e-commerce event I've been to in the last 2.5 years. He seems to know everyone, he helps everyone, and I'm thrilled to have him on the podcast as a guest today. Today's episode is brought to you by, you guessed it, Quiet Light Brokerage, where every member of the team, every M&A advisor here has built, bought, or sold their own online business. There are no junior brokers here, folks. I've personally sold close to $100 million, and I'm just one of 11 advisors on the team. We currently have a slew of new listings coming up, so be sure to visit the buy page at quietlightbrokerage.com. And if you're a seller and want to know the value of your business, which is likely your most valuable asset, don't go to the water cooler and talk to your friends about what they sold their business for. Figure it out for real. Talk to one of the advisors on the team. We're here to help. It's free. We don't care if you're ready to sell now or not planning to sell in the next 24 months. We're definitely here to help. And we will. We've learned from experience that planning does help you get a higher value. So take that step. Rich, my friend, welcome to the Quiet Light Podcast. How are you?
Hey, Joe. I'm doing well. And thanks for that intro. That was great.
That is a beautiful background there. Are you? Is that a virtual brick office background?
It is really a virtual brick background, yep. Yes.
I can't do it. The lighting, it makes me look like I got a halo on and all that stuff. So.
Well, I think that's part of the secret is I have good lighting. And you know, I have lights in front of me. And the most critical is the hair light, the light above that makes you stand out from the background. So even though I don't have much hair, I still have a hair light. And
that's, making I've never the difference. Heard of a hair light. I'm going to have to look that one up.
Yeah.
Look that one up for sure.
It's, if you look up 3-point lighting, that's like the light that's behind you typically.
Well, it's making you look for folks that are listening instead of watching, go mm-hmm. to YouTube and look at it. Rich looks very nice with his 3-point lighting and his brick office
Thank
background.
You. And I have to say though, I really kind of struggle to find a background that I like because so many of the backgrounds, the virtual backgrounds are just kind of silly. It's 100%. No, you're not really in that house. So you're not really on that beach or really in outer space.
I was just talking to a friend of ours in common and he's actually on vacation. So I can't make fun of him too much, but he's not at the beach yet. The background was a beach and the waves, it was actually a video background. So the waves kept repeating. So I did notice after a while and I said, John, you're not actually at the beach. He goes, no, I'm in the Airbnb. So
right.
Pretty funny
it's like background. That Yule log thing they used to have at Christmas time with the fireplace.
It is.
And actually, if you watch it really closely, one of the little ashes on the log suddenly jumps, and that's where you know the end of the loop.
That's it right there.
If you want to be a nerd about it, I guess. But
I guess so. Speaking of nerds, right? You're a patent attorney. That's
speaking of nerds.
Speaking of total and complete nerd, you man. No, yeah. Look, I've
yeah,
seen you
get much nerdier than patent attorney for sure.
I don't think I've seen another patent attorney at any of the events. I see you at every e-commerce event, mastermind group, whatever it is. I think the last one we were at together was Billion Dollar Summit with Kevin King. Yes. I see you everywhere. Right. You're helping e-commerce entrepreneurs, you know, is it patents, trademarks? Tell us a little bit more detail about what you do.
Yeah. I mean, it is patents and trademarks. I mean, I help them to protect what's protectable. I mean, a lot of times when you're out in business and you're launching a new product, you want to prevent people from just copying what you're doing and jumping on top of the bandwagon that you create. And so the extent possible, it's great to create IP protection, intellectual property protection. to protect the thing that differentiates you from others, so that the thing that consumers are looking for in your products is also something which you can keep exclusive. And that's what I seek to do.
Now, you just said new product. When you're launching a new product, talk to us about the timing around when somebody can file for a patent, because I think there's a certain period of time and whatnot. If it's out to market, it's still okay. Can you touch on that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's critical. And I'm glad you asked, because I think that's one of the most important things for entrepreneurs to know, because it's where I've seen them lose out the most, is by filing too late. And so the way it works is that in most of the world, if you make the idea public before you apply for a patent, then it's too late. So in most of the world, it's what's called absolute novelty, where if it was made public in any way before you apply for a patent, then it's game over. Ooh. But in the US, there is technically a one-year grace period.
Okay.
But in the US, there's technically a one-year grace period where if you put it out there and then you file a patent application within a year, you still can be okay. But many times what happens is that, you know, people launching a product, you know, they want to be conservative with their resources, which is extremely understandable in business. You want to spend money on what you need to spend money on. And so they'll say, okay, well, patents are expensive, so why don't I put it off? And if things go well, then I'll get a patent. The problem is they come to me after 2 years have gone by, and I have to give them the unhappy news that it's too late to ever apply for a patent.
Absolutely. So, yeah. And then everybody.
So in the US, 1 year, it's game over.
Okay. And if you do it 9 months in, the rest of the world is off, right? You can't.
Most of the world is off. There's still some places where there's a grace period, but most of the world is off. Okay. And that's why I mentioned the rule about the most of the world first, because a lot of times people that know a little bit of patents think about that 1 year rule and they say, well, I don't really have to do anything until a year goes by. I mean, that's fine if you want to give up your foreign rights.
Yeah. Right. So, and usually those are the ones who are going to knock you off the most, you know, the Chinese competitors, which is challenging.
But that's also a good thing to understand about this too, is people wonder like, well, do I need Chinese patents, or do I need a patent in every country around the world? So the way to back into that question is what a U.S. patent does. A U.S. patent prevents anyone else from making, using, or selling the product in the U.S. Can they make it in China? Yes, but then can they bring it here and sell it here? No, not if you have a U.S. patent. So the most common thing people are worried about when they say, do I need a Chinese patent, is whether it can be made overseas and brought in here. And the answer is no, if you have a U.S. patent.
And how do you fight that? Let's just go straight to the beast, Amazon. You know, anybody that's selling a product these days, they're more than likely selling on Amazon and more than likely selling the majority of their revenues on Amazon. And I'm obviously generalizing there, but patent protection wise, let's say somebody has a patent, utility design, and we'll get into that in a bit as well. Amazon's gotten a lot better at helping their sellers fight infringement, I believe, right?
Yes. And I would say that from the standpoint of someone who has the patent, you know, Amazon is practically a dream. You know, you make an IP complaint, and they shut down the competitors' listings in most circumstances. So it's great to be the one that's holding the patent when you're dealing with Amazon, because the problem is that they're even a bit overzealous in terms of shutting people down. As you know, a lot of times people get shut down unfairly because of patents. So if you have the patent, Amazon's great. If someone's coming at you with a patent, it's not so great.
Yeah, and we've both had a client in common in that regard. Talk to us about the different types of patents. And let me just say that, you know, I've been doing what I do here as an advisor at QuietLight for 8 years now. And, you know, of all the transactions I've done, Rich, I think probably only a handful of them, maybe five, have had any kind of patent protection. Everybody has seems to have a trademark, and we'll get into that a bit as well. But for those listening, if there's an opportunity for you to get a patent and you believe in yourself and the marketability of the product, you will get more value, because one of the four things that buyers are looking for is defensibility of the business. And there's nothing better than a patent. Now, let's talk about breaking that down a little bit, Rich, to design patent and utility patent. Because I hear, you know, easier to get a design patent, but utility patent is more defensible. Can you talk about the differences between the two?
Yeah, absolutely. And you're totally correct about that. I mean, design patent tends to be easier to get, actually a lot easier to get, but in many scenarios can be less valuable. Amazon is an exception to that, and we'll talk about that in a moment. So first of all, the difference between the two. Utility patent is what you typically think of when you think of an invention, or you think of someone patenting an invention. You think of someone made an improvement. Somebody worked in their garage and came up with a better way for a can opener to operate. And so they come up with a mechanism. And the utility patent then is what would protect that improvement. It protect that structural difference, that those functional differences. That's what a utility patent is all about. Like the kind of stereotypical notion of what an invention is. And that's how it's protected. A design patent is strictly about the appearance. It's strictly about the way the product looks. So the shape of the product. And so if you get a design patent, then it's really only protecting a product that has that appearance. And so if someone kind of copies the concept of what you're doing functionally and makes it look different, then it's not going to infringe the design patent. So over the years, people would always say that, well, utility patents are valuable, design patents not so much, because with a design patent, you just change the way it looks and then you're getting around the patent. And that has, you know, that's valid, except that these days on Amazon, there's certain advantages. So first of all, because a design patent is about the way that the product looks, then if you do an IP complaint on Amazon for, let's go to the other example, for utility patent. So utility patent, it's about a functionality. Now, utility patents and infringement, it's about wording. It's about kind of a definition in the patent that describes exactly what's covered. It's like a table that has four legs and it has rubber feet on the base or whatever. It doesn't fit the definition, where the design patent is just about the way it looks in the drawings. So then now again, look toward the situation. Someone does an IP complaint on Amazon. They say, this hijacker is copying my utility patented product. Amazon is faced with trying to interpret this patent. But if it's a design patent, then you're saying, hey, this hijacker, their product, it looks like my design. Well, Amazon is just going to look at the drawings and the design patent. They're going to look at the product listing that you're looking to shut down, and they'll say, okay, looks the same, and they shut them down. So it's actually easier to get recourse on Amazon with a design patent than with a utility patent. So it could be quite valuable. And the other thing is, you know, just think about how people copy you on Amazon. People typically don't say, hey, that's a great concept, let's take some time and design our own. They say, you know what, I'm just going to knock this off. Let me see if I could find the same manufacturer to sell me some of that product, or even just, here's another manufacturer in China, and they send them a sample and say, can you make this exact thing? So when people copy you on Amazon, they don't get imaginative about it, which means it's going to look the same, which means it's going to infringe the design patent. So where traditionally design patents might be less valuable, they've actually been very valuable on Amazon. And I advise people that if you have a product that you're launching on Amazon that has a fairly distinctive look, you might as well do a design patent, because it could really pay off later.
Can you work with the folks, you know, at Gemba or down here at Inventus in Charlotte and get an industrial designer to change the look and design of the product, even though the functionality, the utility of it is the same? Can you design it differently and then apply for a design patent? I obviously don't know if you're going to get it or not.
Often you can. But. Yes. I mean, it the situation matters, of course, but often, yes, you can do that. Like if you recognize that when someone has a design patent, it's not about the functionality, then yeah, you could make your own design and get your own patent for it.
Well, let's talk about, you know, one of the reasons people don't apply for the patent, obviously they thought they had more time. They go out to market and it's right. 13 months out and they too late. The other is that they're like, man, that's just, it's a lot of dough. I'm barely scraping together money here for inventory. Yep. What is the cost difference between utility and design? And I think there's quite a significant difference.
There is quite a significant difference. And you're right. I mean, people that are launching products, I mean, a lot of times being successful on Amazon is about being scrappy. It's about being able to move quickly and get something out there and not spend a lot of money on launch because it's a bit of a numbers game and not every product's going to be successful. So if you get a few out there, a few irons in the fire inexpensively, then that can be the key to success. So with that in mind, yeah, I mean, it's something you want to carefully consider whether it's worth patenting. But in terms of the difference in price, typical utility patent is going to be at least $10,000, where design patent, just a few. It's just a few, yeah.
So I applied once upon a time, my wife and I designed a product and we applied for a utility patent. And looking back, I kind of wish we had just focused on the design patent. It's before I knew you. Otherwise, I would have used you and I would have gotten the patent, whereas I actually didn't get the patent. But I wished I had focused on the design aspect of it. But it's in the e-commerce business and I'm never going there again. I love doing what I do here as an advisor at QuietLight. So I'm actually working with the folks down at Inventus in Charlotte. They're going to give it to somebody, a former client of QuietLight's actually, and let them run with the product if they can.
Oh, interesting.
But for those that are listening and have products and are thinking, well, how do I find an industrial designer? I've mentioned them twice. Inventus Partners down in Charlotte, very, very good at what they do. Been around for about 22 years. Louis Foreman is one of the founders of the company, lives down the street from me, one of my friends. And then Zach over at Gemba, great guy. We've had him on the podcast. They do fantastic stuff.
I've had Zach on my podcast as well. And I love the guys at Gemba. They're really great.
Really fantastic. I agree. One of the things that you actually talked about at the Billion Dollar Summit and when we were there with Zach as well, was taking expired patents and innovating them. Can you talk about that a little bit in terms of people with, you know, motivation and idea?
I'm glad you remember that, you know, like you remember my talk from last November.
One guy that was listening. Just for the record. Look, everybody, Rich and I
both did. It was all for you, Joe.
Rich and I both did a presentation on the same day. And after the presentations of the day, Kevin, who's the founder of the event, he has everybody break out into different groups. There's a table where Rich and Joe are. There's a table for Matt and Jason and the different things that they talked about. And that event was all about, you know, driving revenue and importing from China and competing and knocking off competitors. Right. Rich and I sat at the table alone together. No one had any interest in talking to us.
Right, right. So no one had any questions. I guess our presentations were so complete that no one had any questions. And
that's what I was thinking.
And yeah, exactly. And so you and I got a chance to talk. So
exactly.
That's great.
So talk about reverse engineering something that's an expired patent. How do you do that?
Okay. So few principles here that are important to that. And one is that once a patent expires, it can't be renewed. And once a patent expires, it's fair game. So if you want to do exactly what was in the patent, the expired patent, you're free to do that. It's kind of like the whole basis of the patent system is that in exchange for protecting you for a limited time, say 20 years with your patent, you're essentially explaining it. You're explaining the product. You're explaining the idea in full in that patent application, so that at the end of that time period, you've explained to the future essentially how to go ahead with your product, how to go ahead with your invention. So there's some real beauty to that, in that not only is it that it's free for you to use it, but the inventor laid out for you exactly how to go ahead doing it. So there is this invaluable resource in the patent record, in the 10 million plus issued United States patents, where there are tons of bring it out of the darkness and into the light, and have that idea have its day. And there's nothing you need to do. You don't need to contact the inventor. You don't need to get permission from their heirs. You just can go ahead and do it.
How do you go ahead and search for expired patents?
Aha, the million-dollar question.
Yes.
One of the best resources for searching patents easily, not thoroughly, but easily, is Google Patents. So that's patents, P-A-T-E-N-T-S, .google.com. And there are some kind of expert navigation features on the left-hand side. One of them allows you to limit the date that the patent is from. And you could say that it was filed more than 20 years ago, because essentially utility patents filed more than 20 years ago are now expired. Design patents issued more than 15 years ago are expired also. Okay. So you want to limit it by date. And then it gets a little bit complicated in terms of the search query. The best way is to look by classification. And that's probably more involved than I could just describe right here. But the point is that there's over 100,000 different classifications where patents are arranged. So basically all kind of hand tools might be in class 4, and hand tools with a sharpened edge might be then in subclass 161.
Yeah. All right.
And so you do a little research, find that subclass, you could plug it into Google Patents, and then you find all the patents that fit the category you're looking for. You're looking for sharpened hand tools, and then you limit it by date, and then all of a sudden you're looking at expired patents, and you have to do a good amount of hunting to find those good ideas, because there's a lot of mediocre ideas.
Interesting approach, Rich, because you're a patent attorney, but this idea, this concept that you presented up on stage is really, hey, look, these are expired, go ahead and it's a product idea. So it's a really interesting way to go about creating or developing a product for yourself. I wanted to go backwards a minute here, but for people that are listening, I think it's important. I did want to talk about, just mention it here briefly, but we'll talk about it in more detail in a minute. And that's every Friday at noon, you have a live webinar you call Office Hours, where you do live Q&A regarding patents. Okay. So it's Office Hours. It's a live webinar. And how do they find it? How do they search that online?
Probably the best way it would be to go to the Facebook group. So just the Goldstein Patent Law Facebook group. And there's a bunch of, you'll see posts from other Office Hours. And in there, you'll find the link that actually lets you kind of opt into the system so that we send you reminders about it each week.
Good enough.
So that's probably the best way. Or of course, if you are in the Facebook group on Fridays at 12 p.m. Eastern time, then you'd see it happening right then and there, because I also posted in the Facebook group. But the thing you want to do is just kind of work your way through there to get into on the list so that you're in the Zoom webinar, and that's where you can ask questions.
Beautiful. Okay. So for those that are interested in learning more directly from Rich, it's Office Hours on Friday. Go to GoldsteinPatentLaw.com and weave your way into the group there.
And I'll send you a link. So if you happen to have show notes that include links, I'll get you a link.
Definitely include it. All right. So I want to go back to the design patent and, being able to take it down off of Amazon. Can you do the same here's a story that was told to me, and I think I was into my 33rd ounce of beer, so I may get it wrong. It was
so that's 1 liter, I think.
It was a I don't do those conversions. It was a mini mastermind group from e-commerce fuel, and one of the founders that was at that event has a design patent on a very interesting product. And he said he gets knocked off a lot because it's a very low cost item. He gets knocked off all the time. And his approach is to just let it happen. Let them go ahead and, you know, grow their revenues and get some money in the bank. And then he swoops in, takes them down off of Amazon. He talked about Alibaba as well, but he's actually saying that he can take the money out of their bank account as well. Can you address that? Does that, was I, did I, did I have three beers instead of two and I'm getting the story completely wrong? Probably.
Yeah. I don't know how you would directly take money out of that bank account because of course,
I don't think he took
any
it out.
Allegation of infringement, someone has the right to dispute that. Right. So it would be kind of crazy if someone could come into your bank account and just take the money. But ultimately, if someone is infringing you, and you prove it, you would prevail and you're entitled to damages.
Yeah. He said that he actually makes more money through damages than he does from actually selling product.
Well, and there's another angle to that too, is if you let someone else come along and kind of develop some significant sales and you have the ability to stop them, and they don't want to stop, then you work out a licensing arrangement. And so, let them do the work. Let them deal with the inventory and everything else and pay you for each product that's being made. That's not a bad way to make a living.
Yeah, I've seen that as well. Last year, 2019, just before Father's Day, I had a listing that maybe 30 days before Father's Day went live. And it had just gotten all of its utility patents issued and I think a design patent as well. And it was a very Father's Day oriented gift. So we closed about a week before Father's Day and the new owner of the business just took action and every competitor, like you said, was poof, gone off of Amazon, primarily I think because of the design patents and his revenue just exploded. And that listing will probably become available in the next 12 months because he's just done a terrific job with it. And it's the ability to take down competitors and the design patent aspect of it. He's got utility as well, which really makes a big, big difference. Value-wise, anytime I see a business that's listed with a design patent or a utility patent, it's gonna get a bump in value by, if it would normally be three times, it might pop up to 3.5. If it's 3.5, it might pop up to 4. That's a multiple of discretionary just because of the defensibility aspect of it.
And that could be significant difference. That could be, 6 or 7 figures right there.
Oh, easily. If you're doing $200,000 and or $500,000 in earnings, and we're talking about a 0.5 bump, that's $250,000 added to your listing.
Yeah, exactly. And where you've invested maybe, anywhere from a few thousand to maybe at the most $20,000 in the IP protection. And that could be your biggest ROI right there.
Yeah.
But it's gotta be the right IP. It's gotta be for the right product and a good patent for sure.
All right. So let's talk about the right one. Just give me the odds. 1 out of 10 that you take on as a client succeeds, you get that design of utility. 2 out of 10, 7 out of 10. What are the odds that you take on?
I'll tell you, it varies from, first of all, it's a matter of how you define success. And it's also, it varies tremendously on what the person does with it. Right. So you have people that are dreaming where they're like, I just want to patent this idea and maybe someone will license it from me. That's more like 1 out of 50. And then you have people that are actually determined to launch a product. They might not have launched a product before, but they're determined that it's not just going to be an exercise in getting a patent. They're putting this out there.
Yeah.
And then it's much better odds, like people that are really passionate and determined about taking it forward.
I'm actually talking about the odds of getting the patent.
Of getting the patent.
Yeah. Yeah. So people ask me if I take on a client, what are the odds of selling the business? And I give them, the stats. Do you have any ballpark numbers?
It's probably like 70%.
Okay. Because you've been doing this for decades, right? And you can look at
26 years.
26. Yeah. So you can look at something and have a pretty good idea. You'll do your own research, I assume, before you take on the client and have a pretty good idea whether you're going to be able to get that patent issued.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the first step in our process is a patent evaluation where I get to know what they have in mind doing. We do research to see what else is out there that's similar, and then I recommend options. So usually in that phase, we get a sense of what the risks are. And so if the client wants to move forward with it, they do so knowing kind of what their chances are and what they're headed for.
Is there a cost for the patent valuation?
$1,800.
That's not too bad. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Does that get applied to the designer utility patent, or there's an additional number?
Yeah, no,
that?
It's a la carte. It's a la carte. Gotcha, I mean, gotcha. That's pretty much how I do things. I like flat fees, but a la carte. So we only pay for the things that you encounter, not for things that you might encounter, you know, down during the process. So at each step, we take stock and say, this is where we're at. Do we want to take this next step? And this is what it would cost if we do.
Yeah. Talk to us about trademarks, right? Everybody seems to have one. It's kind of low-hanging fruit, and I think it's a must-have in most cases. You handle those as well?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. And exactly. Patents are not always advisable, because sometimes the patent that you're going to get isn't going to be even worth it for you. But trademarks are basically a no-brainer. Anytime you have a brand out there, you're going to want to protect it with a trademark. And you know, the typical beginning to end cost for getting a trademark is maybe $2,000. And so it's worth it. And you know, anytime you have a brand out there, whether it's on Amazon or elsewhere, just get your trademark protected. I think the biggest thing that stops people from protecting their trademarks is that they hear stories about people that had an issue with another company's trademark, and they end up spending $100,000 resolving that dispute, et cetera. And so they say, well, you know what, that trademark thing, let's put that off as long as we possibly can. But the truth is if you get your trademark registered, that's how you avoid that $100,000 problem. So spend a couple thousand, get it registered, get it protected. That can pay off tremendously in avoiding other problems down the road.
Is there a use in issue or time period with trademarks as well? So if I've created this name and I'm using it, do I have up to a year as well before I lose the ability to trademark it or not?
Yeah, actually, it works quite differently from patents. So, and it's almost opposite in that you, in order to get the trademark fully registered to complete the process, you need to be using it. And if you are using it, then you acquire rights. So let's say you've been using it for 10 years and now you apply for the trademark. You know, you've been acquiring rights, what they call common law rights, during that time. Just more difficult to prove, and if there's a dispute, more difficult to resolve it if you haven't gotten a registered trademark. But you've acquired rights during that time. So if 10 years have gone by, you can still apply for a trademark. The problem is if you've been selling the product all that time, and someone beats you to the trademark office by even a day, then now you know, you have an uphill battle to get the trademark. I mean, you might be able to prevail in the end because of your common law rights, because you've been using it, but it's a much more difficult thing to do than if you simply applied before that other person who snuck into the trademark office before you.
All right. So I think folks should reach out to you for the trademark as well. Can you talk for a minute about this, about your podcast? I love the fact that you're doing one, Innovations and Breakthroughs. How long have you been doing it? Who's your typical guest? What are you doing on the show?
Okay. Yeah. I love doing the podcast as well. I mean, it's just a great way to connect with people, and especially people that are innovating, people that have had a path toward getting their products out there onto the market. So it's basically about people who've done it, people who've attempted it. And sometimes they've done it. Sometimes they've succeeded. Sometimes they've failed. But their story, their path that they took of taking something that was just a notion in their head and making it into a reality, that's a story worth telling. And it's fun to talk with those people. And I've interviewed a lot of people in e-commerce. I mean, a lot of the people that you and I both know, and also people that are outside of those circles, but who had great success, and people in direct response, like people like Rick Cesari, that have launched products out there, in the conventional retail channels, like, and licensed them, like Bob Serling. I mean, people like that I've had on my show, and it just keeps getting better. I just keep getting more and more interesting people on.
Well, innovations and breakthroughs. I want people to listen in on that. Again, if you have a product out there, if you're doing, e-commerce, FBA, whatever it is that you're doing, I think design, utility, patent, the more you get it protected, the more defensibility it's going to have, the more value your business is going to have in terms of driving more revenue and adding more profit, but also in the eventual exit of your business. And someday you will exit, whether it's whether it's a decision that's made for you or that you hopefully make yourself. And also, definitely go to goldsteinpatentlaw.com and check out the office hours. I think that's brilliant, Rich. You're there helping people, answering questions, doing what you can to sort of take the mystery out of that. I think it's fantastic.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. I mean, I love working with people. I love helping people. And it's just like a little notch of time that I set aside to do that each week, and it's been growing and growing, so I've been enjoying it.
Well, good for you, good for the folks that get to listen in as well. Well, listen, man, I hope I get to see you soon. Hopefully this whole COVID thing will be over and we get to go to events and shake hands and have a drink and all that good stuff and meet our friends again. It'll be a while, I assume, but hopefully not too long from now. So thanks for being a guest, man. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure, Joe.
Today's podcast was produced by Rise25 and the Quiet Light content team. If you have a suggestion for a future podcast subject or guest, email us at podcast@quietlightbrokerage.com. Be sure to follow us on YouTube, Facebook, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram, and subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.